Welcome, everyone, to Into the Nexus 428 for the week of the 3rd in June already. Before the 4th week of the CCL, welcome, everybody. I'm Kyle Ferguson. Garrett is out sick. Everyone go wish him well on the Twitter and the Discord. Contact him, wish him well, and a speedy recovery. In his stead, I am joined today by Bahamut of the CCL of... Wait, do you have extra letters in your Twitch? Is it
Bahamut Gaming?
Yeah, excellent. The very same, fresh off his adventures in Bloodborne. Now here to talk Heroes of the Storm and more. Happy birthday, Heroes! Happy birthday, everybody, for Heroes of the Storm.
Happy birthday to everyone. Everyone out there, it's everyone's birthday. But no, it's actually, I didn't realize this. One of the streamer friends that I have, Totsky, it was her birthday yesterday. So she actually shares the birthday with Heroes of the Storm, as well as, I believe, Diablo Immortal now shares the birthday with Heroes of the Storm, right?
Brutal. Brutal. There were some really sweet tweets going around yesterday. I saw in particular Lana Baczynski was tweeting about her old Heroes team. AZ Jackson has been sharing notes,
Revealing behind the curtain, sort of say.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
And then I saw our old community managers, Bethany Lashes, you may know her as everyone around the Twitter was just sharing some good memories of good times, and that was very cool to see.
Yeah, that we definitely stole her away at Wisdom. We definitely stole away Lashes.
Yeah, I'm so excited about that. The team over at Wisdom is just so stacked. And I heard today you guys became a Pokemon Go gym.
I actually, just before the podcast today, I was scrolling through Twitter, just relaxing after stream, and I was like, oh, wow, yeah, that's actually really cool. I'll have to reinstall it when I go for the LAN finals, August 5th through 7th, at Mall of America.
That's very cool. That's so awesome. Yeah, you're going to be up on the tri-stage there.
Oof. And I'm so nervous and excited. Actually, I brought it up on broadcast. I had mentioned, I was like, yeah, this is my first LAN event. Like, by comparison, like, Grubby's done. He's played in LAN events. He's casted. He's hosted. He's done all those things. Justing, he was a player, so he's done LAN events as well. And this is my first one. Like, I went to Heroes of the Dorm. I've been to BlizzCon, but I've never been, like, one of the, like, people actually casting and commentating. Yeah. Like, so it's exciting and nerve-wracking all at the same time. So it's gonna be fun.
That's
be a good time.
Super cool. Oh man, live events are just a whole nother energy, and your guys are gonna have some events there going on and all that. I'm really excited.
And before anyone asks, either in Twitch chat or in the tweet, or if they're watching they're listening to the recording or anything like that, there is no information yet about ticketing for the CCL LAN, but it should be coming soon, TM.
Awesome.
It's not a Blizzard TM, it's a Wisdom TM, so might be a little bit sooner than a Blizzard TM, but either way, it's being worked on. That's as much as I can kind of like leak out to all of you, is that it is being worked on, and I do know it is like, it's not like, oh yeah, it's like on a list of things to do. No, it's actually being worked on. So we should have some information fairly soon. Like I got a Discord message from someone. They've already booked a flight from Australia to come to the CCL LAN.
That's cool.
Yeah. So there's people already buying plane tickets like that. Like there's a dude from Australia. I'm pretty sure there was a couple people that messaged me from within the United States that have already bought plane tickets that they're already going to it. So, yeah, I'm super pumped. Like I'm ready to go. I want it to be August personally.
Oh, and it's such a cool season because everyone who's on ping is just so stoked to be there.
And right?
Like every loss they have, they're like, yeah, we'll see.
And so that's the interesting thing to me, because I think a lot of people, like I read like the comments on YouTube and stuff for some of the VODs, because I go back and I watch and I try and, you know, work on the things that I think maybe I was a little weak on in a broadcast or something like that. And one of the things that I've noticed is like, I'll dog Granite Gaming during a broadcast because they don't do something good. And I'll see stuff in the comments like, oh, just wait till Granite Gaming gets to LAN. It's like, you still have to top four to make it to LAN. Like you can't, it's not like everybody goes. it's one of those things where like, you still have to prove yourself. Like top three is guaranteed. The fourth place has to go through the gauntlet, or at least be the gatekeeper in the gauntlet. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, Granite had their best showing in week three that they'd have all season, but even then it was still a loss.
There's always this interpretation, though, and it's built over the previous CCLs, this perhaps tradition now, that the last half is where things get serious. And that's why I'm so excited for week four this season, because everyone kind of, you know, they train into it a little bit. Now, this season's quite a bit different because we basically wholesale took teams that were competing in NGS or Masters Clash events and put them in the CCL because of the, there was no draft. Like, the whole team that has worked together was trained and ready week one.
And that's actually the really cool part about, I think, getting rid of the draft system for season four was that we gave, I wouldn't say the power to the players, but we gave the ability for the players to build the rosters that they've been quite literally wanting since season one. I mean, if you go back into season one, two, and three, there were a lot of orgs that, you know, they're happy they get to draft the players, they get to pick everything. But there's a lot of players that were on their side saying, well, but, you know, we would love to build this team because we know this team would be so good. And I like this avenue that Wisdom's Hero CCO went. Like, I think this is really, really smart. I mean, if it works, great. If it doesn't, we can always revert it and change things and grow. Like, that's the whole point of this. Like, if we come back at the end of the season, it's like, ah, oh, this wasn't good for the meta, the teams, the competitive nature, then we can change these things. But right now, as I look at it, Kyle, I think this is some of the best Hero CCL action we've had. And I know, yes, some people might be rolling their eyes like, what about Simplicity? They're not doing well. What about Granite? They're not doing well. As Kyle was saying, like, this is kind of that turning point in the season. Week 4, 5, 6, and 7 are the most critical weeks in the CCL season, in my opinion. Everyone's practiced. Everyone kind of knows each other in a sense. They've got data on each other for 3 weeks. So this is where we should really see things ramp up, like, exponentially.
Well, the weird thing is we're hearing that same thing from the teams that aren't performing well. Oh, just wait till we get to LAN. And as you mentioned, they got to get to LAN. But we're also hearing from the teams that are succeeding, just wait till we get to LAN. Like, particularly, I've heard from Maya players, Genji players, Sammy players. Anyone who does any melee assassin is always like, I'm not touching that for the entirety of the online event with Ping. But you get me to the LAN and I will destroy. And so we might even have, like, would be really bizarre is if we get a patch at the end of this season for Heroes of the Storm that's going to hit right around week 5. And they're like, yeah, we're cleaning up, you know, this. We've seen the CCO. We're going to mess with this a little bit. But all those melee assassins just go untouched. And all of a sudden come the LAN event. Mm-hmm. It's a complete throwdown. It's a slaughter of just maddening Kiras and everything people wish they could play with perfect ping.
So that's actually, it's an interesting conversation, Kyle, because ping is such a it's such an interesting concept, or it's an interesting thing in the games that we play, specifically obviously Heroes of the Storm. But like, I've talked to players who are used to having X amount of ping, like 100 plus, whatever, and they're calculating all their moves, abilities, and everything on that ping. So I wonder if there is going to be a little bit of that, like, and of course there'll be, you know, the players will come early, they'll be able to scrim and they'll practice, but like, I wonder if there will be a little bit of a growing pain getting into everyone being same ping or low ping, because you're not used to it. You're overcompensating. Like, for example, Stark from the Ghillie Sharks has told me, he's like, when I come to the US for vacation and I'll play some Heroes of Storm, he's overthinking all of his abilities. So he's actually casting them later than he should because of, or earlier than he should because of just how the ping is working out. So it's one of the things that, like, we all talk about it, but I wonder how it actually will work out. And also, will the teams actually go for those spicy, low latency heroes like Tracer or Kira or Maiev or Genji? Because we are seeing a couple of them here and there, obviously from players that I think are localized to maybe a central server, but I will see. Like, it's LAN. People might get nervous and say, we're just going to play standard. We're going to pick Muradin. We're going to pick Stukov, and we'll just fill the rest.
Well, Muradin's a great example of that, because we have seen a lot of Muradin play, particularly things like Skullcracker, with a huge popularity because of the ping. At least I've been told. Maybe it's actually really good and they don't want to kind of give it away. I know it's a at-home favorite. And I've started using it, too. I've been playing a lot of Muradin recently because the CCL. In fact, what I do
same.
When I draft is, draft fires up, it shows me a map. I just turn to the CCL, and I find that map, and I see what they picked in the role. I'm like, oh, hey, Anduin's. Oh, Muradin's. Oh, Hoggers. And I've been basically playing the CCL selection in that way. But Skullcracker, because of ping, a lot of players have told me that they just right-click, and then they let it roll. Yeah. And it's going to do so much damage. It's going to have such a big effect that I don't have to control. All I got to do is get that initial click landed on the hero I want.
I've been changing up my Muradin play as well, because for the longest time, I was a Sledgehammer at level 4. Like, always take Sledgehammer. You get that increased damage post level 10 on maps like Battlefield of Eternity. You actually have race value for your team on the Immortal, as well as you do have siege potential on almost any single map. But with the way that you can play Muradin, especially with what we're seeing, like, I agree, like, Skullcracker, we're seeing a lot of that at level 7, but I love Heavy Impact. Pair that with the Dwarf Launch and the Dwarf Block, respectively, at 16 and level 1. There's just so much utility with that. So you dive in, you get your block stacks, you get the slow, you get the cooldown reduction post level 16, and then if you Thunderclap, you can get a 5% cooldown reduction on your avatar, like Heroic. Yes. So you can sit there and, like, I've been utilizing Reverberation from level 4 more and more, because you can get so much just value if you just dive in on a clumpy group of enemy heroes like Infernal Shrines or Battlefield. So I definitely, like, I think we're all kind of pulling away a little bit at some of these talent picks, but also, as you were mentioning, Kyle, a lot of the heroic picks are starting to kind of shift a little bit when it comes to, I think, even our own Storm League games.
Muradin's really got it all too. Like, yeah. It snuck up on me, in particular, when you read his text. I think it's something atrocious sounding, like 3-man and auto attack. And like, why
would I do that?
Why would I ever auto attack on Muradin? But you forget, you know, Alterac Pass, there's the little minions. You forget on Infernal Shrine, yeah, there's the monkeys. And you start getting in these auto attacks. And then you go Skullcrack and you're like, oh my goodness. And then Reverberation starts going. And you're going, wait a minute, I actually have the mana to do these things. The only weird thing about Muradin right now is Avatar is the preferred pick, and it still should be, but we're still in a kill the tank, like giant killer kind of meta, but it's still really good. But my brain kind of goes, I don't really like either one of these heroics right now.
So Justin actually has brought this up in broadcast from time to time, that he would actually point out, he's like, in some situations, Haymaker is better than having Avatar. Because if you are, let's say you draft a Muradin and you end up going up against a dive composition and you're not really built for dive yourself. I like the idea of, you know, the enemy dives you. Let's say Greymane dives on top of you. You Haymaker him away, and you're starting to push things around. Or even better yet, let's say it's Greymane and Anubarak. Anubarak burrows in, Greymane dark flights in, and he's trying to razor swipe and play off of the CC of Anubarak. You get one good Haymaker, and all of a sudden, Greymane, he's a lone wolf, and he is definitely easily to kill. So at that point, Haymaker does become viable, but it's that mindset that Justin has, where it's not until he brings it up and explains it where you're like, oh yeah, like, it can definitely work. But you don't think about that during the game. You're just like, Avatar safety, big boy, keep hitting people with my hammers.
There was a Storm League player I faced once that was a Haymaker legend, but Ooh. This wasn't in the Dwarf Launch deep back into the team kind of way. This was entirely based on punching you into enemies. And he would take me, the tank Diablo at this time, and aim me at my back line, dealing like 638 damage, but it was still enough that he sort of joined the dive and gave Muradin a ranged ability to poke with. It was fascinating.
It's, you can just play, like, you can go bowling with the enemy team in a sense.
Yeah. It's crazy. And then, of course, this is like that home game where, like, things are so hyper specialized. Like, go over to the youtube.com/heroeshearth and watch the hammer video. I've never seen so many arguments in the comments.
From one, oh my people God, say, right?
Like, hammer shouldn't exist in this game. But two people being like, nah, this isn't my hammer, or I'm a better hammer than this. Like, it's so hyper specialized, particularly the arguments around BFG and its winning qualities over something like Napalm Strike.
It's actually really interesting, because I do my best to watch back the CCL VODs, and I, you know, read through Twitch chat from time to time. And I remember I brought up the hammer video. I was like, hey, by the way, make sure you check out the YouTube. Kyle just did that unaverted hammer video, and it was really, really good information. And I was watching, and I was like bringing up, I was like, yeah, the talent build, blah, blah, blah. And someone in the Twitch chat was like, I didn't realize there was another way to build hammer. I'm like, have you, what? There's, huh? Have you seen Spider-Mind Build Hammer? No?
Oh,
have
you seen solo lane? Yeah, it's so good.
Oh my god, like it's like there's a couple different ways to build hammer now, but apparently it's like Li Ming. It's like you got to these are the talents you take. If you don't take them, you're wrong.
That was another video too. Anytime we do anything touching Li Ming, it's like, no, this should have been orb build. And there's this long diatribe about why orb build would have been perfect here. And granted, in certain situations, particularly when you have enough lane clear and all that sort of stuff comes in, orb build can work out. But it's really fun having the CCL on right now as that leading force in new builds. Mm-hmm. But we do need to take that step every time and say, butt ping. And I think that's something that really needs to be communicated to the watching audience over and over again, that these are often builds influenced by ping and how we are going to play things around that ping. Also,
Shout out to
Bronzebeard's Rage. It's just a lot of fun. So,
I feel like you have to take Bronzebeard Rage. Like, you have to. Like, just one of those things. I know Murden already has the hit the level 10, get the piercing stormbolt stuff and cooldown reduction, but I like the idea of more heroes having more. You reach a certain point and you get this, like Jaina, for example, getting ice block after she hits, 15,000 damage or whatever. Like, I want to see this on more heroes. I've had this dialogue about different heroes as well. Like, and flame me as much as you want, but like make Kael'thas Convection baseline, like just make it baseline. Ooh. And give him a different level one to make it more interesting. Like make it 30 stacks or something. Make it lose a pull upon death. Like make it like Medivh, like just put it baseline. And that way we can see different stuff, or vice versa, make Arcane Barrier baseline. That way we don't have to always take Arcane Barrier at level one. You can, or mana add, excuse me. It's one of those things. Like, I feel like more heroes need these things. Or, with Kael'thas, deal 12,000 damage to the enemies and you get convection value, or you get double flame strike, or you something. Like, I like to see these baked in abilities with heroes, because I think it creates so much interesting nuance with them. It was something I saw in League of Legends, and it was something I always wish was in Heroes of Storm, because I thought it was a really cool thing in League, where these heroes, they change, they scale based on their level. So it's just a new threat.
What's kind of League thing? Is that newer?
I see that one. I couldn't give you the answer, but for example, like, I believe the character name is Kale in League of Legends, where she's like an angel type hero that has ranged attacks. But as you get to different markers with her, like different levels, her range attack changes from like having more range to having a splash to having an arc. I think, I might be wrong on this, but I know that she, for example, had like different changes with her auto attack as she scaled. So I like these things being implemented into Heroes of the Storm as well, with Vault of the Wardens at level 20 from IF, which she really didn't need it, but hey, we got it.
That was really fun. And the Murden change was so needed. And I still go
and Diablo. Yeah. I like the Diablo change.
You know what? In this meta, I like the Diablo change, because Diablo dies a lot.
Yes, and yes, he does.
He needs that help really badly. And oftentimes Diablo's health is this timer for the mid to late game where you go, all right, Diablo did anything in the world, he's about to die. let's see if we can get something made out of that during the time that something on the enemy side is on cooldown. And perhaps that's the biggest trend we're noticing throughout these games, is it's still very much a kill the tank kind of meta. And do you feel like there's any way they could change that up, or is that actually healthy? Like, the tank's tanking the damage, so we're all having fun.
I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit of, like, at least in my own play, I'll come from my, because like I play a decent amount of tank, and I think a lot of the times where like the mentality of kill the tank comes out is when the tank plays too aggressive and the team isn't following. Because I'll do that all the time. Like, I'll be Murden or I'll be a Nubarak, and I'll dive in and I'll quote unquote gap my team between me and the enemy, and I'm isolating myself. So there is value into kill the tank, but also there's also, this is a concept Grubby's talked about with when we talk about like Tychus within the rhythm versus the bigger they are. Because the bigger they are drops, it'll drop an enemy to 30% and then it just does normal damage. So it's really, really good to force the front line back to retreat. But if you have something like a double bruiser or even a triple, or like a main tank double bruiser composition, which we're seeing a little bit more often, that bigger they are isn't that valuable, because if you, let's say you drop the Muradin down to 30%, he backs away, his trait kicks in, but now you have Hogger or Urel or D.Va or Imperius stepping up to take that place. So if there's a lackluster tank or frontline, I think the idea of kill the tank is great, because you kill the tank, you play front to back, and you shred through. But if you've got this main tank, heavy bruiser with control, Hog or Urel, for example, with their abilities to kind of knock back the enemies, that might be a little bit harder, where now you have to consider, all right, how do we kind of dive into the back line? So that's the big thing, is I think it really comes down to draft and play style, which is kind of it's a little bit of a cop out on the question you asked me. But at the same time, like, it also is very situational in these moments, too, because you can play these comps with like Chromie, where, you know, you're just poking the back line consistently and then everyone has to retreat because the back line's been shredded.
You didn't mention Blaze in there. Is that kind of outside that equation?
Oh, I mean, Blaze can be played in any role at this point.
He's just ever present, so let's not define him.
He's a melee assassin. He's a tank. He's a bruiser. I mean, he's technically support with Bunker. Blaze kind of
too.
So like ETC, for example, he's a tank and a support. Like, not like, because we now have healer and support, so there's the difference. Like Medivh, he's a support. So like ETC, he amplifies value to his team. He can get healing at level one. He can give speed bonuses. He can get block stacks. So I don't know. I think it's a lot based on draft and how you want to execute it against that draft is the big thing to consider.
The weirdest thing for me is just not seeing Blaze get bans. But we've got things like Junkrat to deal with and Lucio and God. Sylvanas is still getting a lot of bans too. Hogger is a mystery.
I feel like Hogger comes down to skill. Like, actually, in the preview for the week four preview that we just put out, Justin and I were talking about Liam spins and bounces with Hogger. Like, we asked him in the interview, like, do you have like these patterns that you know? And he's like, oh, it's mostly, you know, RNG, pray that I bounce good. But like, when you watch it back, like, Liam, like, you're lying, bud. Like, it seems like he knows these bounces always. And I think that's the big thing. Like, a good Hogger player really knows how to figure out these bounces and control that. Like, if you can't do that, then I think you're dead in the water half the time.
Well, we'll definitely dive a little deeper on some of the stats and the nitty-gritty of the CCL this week, but you may have been listening to the show and you've heard the ongoing conversation about a little game. Now sharing a birthday with Heroes of the Storm that came out called Diablo Immortal. And I was in your stream yesterday, so I know you've played some of this on PC.
Yes.
Have you played it on phone?
No. I wanted to play it on phone, but last night the day got away from me. Sure. I ended up I was just like, you know, I'm going to bed. I'll check it out. I might try it tonight on phone. But on PC, honestly, the biggest complaint I have is I wish the UI was smaller, as in like the things on the bottom right where it's like, here are your abilities, like press one to summon skeletons or whatever. I wish that was shrunk down. I wish the portrait in the top left was a little bit smaller as well. And then I wish the game was actually zoomed out like 10 to 20%. I feel like I'm kind of on my phone, but on my PC, like right in front of it. I just want to see more. Like, that's the thing, is like, visually, it's a very good looking game. It plays pretty smooth. I mean, I played it on beta PC with mouse and keyboard, and it was all right-ish, but like, I don't know. Like, there was some things that was a little bit of a drag. Some of the dialogue, as I think you're showing right now, some of the dialogue moments and some of the intro to the game felt very dragged on. Mm. So overall, I'm having fun with it, but I would really like, I feel like there's a little bit of quality of life that can be changed. Also, fun fact, as you can see on the left hand side of the bottom left, as you're looking at this, the messages from your friends or anyone don't go away. They don't fade. So those messages just sit there the entire time. And I just that's a little UI thing that I just did not like. And there's no way to like change it or make it go away or give it a timer when you look at your options.
Oh, I feel that. Yeah, the big abilities there are definitely a relic from the phone, because on phone, they need to be that big. I need to press them with my fingers.
Exactly.
Interesting critique on the story there. So, of course, Diablo Immortal, lots of talk about it right now and lots of developer time. Is it really been 5 years? 4 years at the very least. But some 5 years of extra work put into the game.
I'd say about five. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair to say.
That's absolutely insane. Absolutely wild. And now it's finally out and it's here. And we're looking at it as a Heroes of the Storm fan base and going, Oh, zoom it out a little bit. Where's the action? As you mentioned,
yeah.
It is kind of odd that they talk for so much. It's almost like they're like, we are an RPG. This is voice acted. Listen to us. And you go, well, that's nice. That's very nice.
It's a little like some of the voice acting moments and some of the dialogue, it just went on too long. Like, there was a point with Decker Kane where, like, he explains something. You have to walk over to, like, you have to walk, like, an inch from Deckard Cain in the game, and then you have to pick something up, and then he has to explain to you what you just, like, and the crazy thing, you might be like, Bahamut, Kyle, like, you guys are getting too into the weeds on this, it's the beginning of the game. No, it's not. Like, you've already done a significant amount of stuff in the game, and the game is still very much holding your hand for so long. Like, there's actually something you can't unlock until, like, level 35, and I'm like, why? it feels like your hand is being held a little too much, and they really want you to experience the game their way, which is, I don't know. It's just, I kind of felt like I didn't have a lot of freedom to just do whatever. It felt on the rails in a sense.
And maybe that's just the phone. Like, it's easy to insult it and say, you know, oh, baby's first RPG. Like, but not even baby, like just a grown adult and their first ever RPG, and they may have heard of Diablo growing up, and now they're finally going to try one. They have no idea what an RPG is or how to move about. It's weird coming from the past 6 years of games, even put it back to Heroes Birth, where we had League of Legends, Dota, and then Heroes came out, and they're like, and just play. Like, you know how League works. You know how Dota works. Surely, just play our video game. Go. Did you play StarCraft? You get it. And then right after, you know, HGC got shut down, Apex Legends came out. And I remember that being a really big deal for a lot of Heroes of Storm streamers. It was fun, yeah.
Yeah. I got into it pretty deep, but I eventually just fell off because, like always, I find myself back in Heroes, like always.
And I think that's a very true statement. I know a lot of people who have tried out Diablo Immortal. They were playing a Demon Hunter and they went, I mean, yeah, but it's not Vala. And then they went back and played Heroes of the Storm because Vala's a little more fast-paced. Vala's a little more action-based than the actual ARPG in that way. But those skills translated over. That's why I was so jealous of Apex Legends in that way, because I just am awful at shooters. I always have been. And I need a campaign to, like, hold my hand really hard. Like, Overwatch may have been into it if I had a campaign. I need that, like, Halo experience, even participate in multiplayer.
So let me ask you this, Kyle. Are you, you know, talking about just Blizzard IPs here, are you considering Overwatch 2 for the PvE factor, the storyline at all?
I'm interested. It's got to be really rocking.
I think so. Like, I think I'm going to be watching VODs and streams and stuff like that just to figure out, do I want to spend? Because apparently Overwatch 2, like, the PvP is free or something, or maybe if you have Overwatch 1, it just pushes into it. But, like, I think the whole PvE, the whole storyline, I think that's what you're actually paying for if you get Overwatch 2. I might be wrong in this, but I'm pretty sure that's actually how it works out for the new game, which, I mean, we don't even know when it's going to come out. So
that's my experience with it, too, is we are the owners of Overwatch 2 or Overwatch 1 are getting a huge update to their game.
Yeah.
And then you pay for that PvE experience. And, like, what they showed off, what was it, last BlizzCon line with, like, the robots taking damage and the more unique tactics that some of the robots you're fighting might get involved in. That's really cool. I mean, I love Vermintide. I really need fear in a first-person shooter. It's what drives me.
I get you, yeah.
Dead Space. I love Dead Space.
Oh my God, I love Dead Space. I'm so excited to play the second one.
There has to be that element of don't let it touch me in a first-person shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes me go, no, and actually fire the guns. When it's like sterile robots coming at me, that won't give me an infection if they touch me. Like, I'm kind of like, what's the danger?
I mean, realistically, if you just want to play PvE versus robots, just install Team Fortress 2. I mean, you can just do man versus machine. I'm sure they're still doing updates for that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. There's also Darktide coming out. I'm not sure on the date on that one, but that's the...
Oh, right. Yeah, that's the Warhammer version of, like, Left 4 Dead, Bloodborne, Vermintide sort of thing, right? Yeah.
And then there was that game earlier this year. I already forget its name. It was...
Or I said Bloodborne. Back for Blood?
Back for Blood. Back for Blood.
Yep.
Yeah.
I meant to say that. I said Bloodborne. I'm still a FromSoft brain, but I checked out a little bit of Back for Blood, too. It was all of the Left 4 Dead feels that you wanted in like a Left 4 Dead 3 sort of game, but they had like more, they had like a card based system or something like that around it. I didn't play too much. Like there was like, so there, I can't remember anything about that though.
The cards were interesting. You'd basically have a power system. You would be randomly dealt that you could pseudo control. So it kind of gave it a roguelite feel, which was very fun. Then the enemy got cards, which was their buff. And that's more like a mythic system from World of Warcraft, if you will, okay. Affixes that the enemies would have. So it ended up filling out it decently. It lacked the charm, ultimately. It was maybe Anastasia. Anastasia.
Ah.
You know what I mean? Like, the songs are okay, and the animation's solid, but it's not quite Disney. It just doesn't have that level of joy in it.
I love that movie, but you're so right, honestly. Like, Anastasia has some of the best music. Like, Dancing Bears is like one of the best songs, but like, yeah, no, it is. I mean, it is, you know, it's like, it's communism and stuff like that. It's awful and depressing, but like, yeah, it does lack that like Disney shine to it. Yeah, well, if you will.
I mean, Hunchback
of that
Notre
time
Dame.
Period too.
Horrible, horrible people doing horrible things to each other. Hunchback Notre Dame, a movie about bad people.
Oh my God. Yes.
But, you know, it's got that quality, and I even enjoy things like Swan Princess. But, you know, there's like a song between the frog and the turtle, and you're like, where is this going? Why is this here?
Yeah, no, Hunchback was a lot more terrifying of a movie when you watch it as an adult. You're like, there's a lot of very mature concepts in this. Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh my God. Like, yeah, so.
Yeah, you just,
there you go. If you haven't watched Hunchback in a long time, go back and revisit it. You'll sit there and be like, yeah, this is not what I remember watching.
No, it's pretty weird. Also, you know, some movies deserve to live in your memories, like Secret of the Ooze. Great movie. Don't watch it again. It's old. It's moldy, but it's great. It's great. Let it live in your memories. Don't watch it again. But
there's a lot of those. There's a lot of those. Yeah.
But Diablo Immortal, it's such an interesting conversation point right now.
Mm-hmm.
In how video games are impacted by monetization. And I know for Heroes of the Storm, we're all sitting on huge piles of gold saying, game, find me ways to spend this. But at the same time, now Diablo Immortal's coming out. And I almost feel like you can see the tried and true developers of an ARPG be like, we made a really good game. Play our game. Here's voice acting. Deckard Cain is back. No big spoiler. Like, yeah. He shows up in the first 3 minutes. Like, you know, dig it. Like, really, really dig our solo story. And then the second you beat that first boss, it's like, congratulations, hero. You have an 800% discount in the store. It's jarring.
It is, like, it was actually really funny because you start playing the game and the first thing I did was I started going through the menus and people were asking me like, oh, have you been hit with any sort of paywall or this or that? And I'm like, no, nothing so far. And then it was about 30, 45 minutes or so, like, into the game. All of a sudden, like, you hit a certain level, you beat a boss or whatever, and the game just, like, opens up. Like, you have, like, 5 to 8 different sub-menus. You've got a battle pass now. There's sub-menus within the battle pass. There's sub-menus within those sub-menus. Like, you know what the menuing felt like for Diablo Immortal to me? It felt like Pokemon Go. Like, when Pokemon Unite. When Pokemon Unite came out, you would finish a match and then you'd have like sub menus of items to like get and retrieve. And if anyone else's brain's like mine, you don't like to have that little like tick, that notification. So you have to go through and clear out all the things. It's just, there's a lot of menuing. There's a lot of menuing in Diablo Immortal. And if you can get past like having a little like the little red charm next to it to say you've got something, then good on you. But like for me, it was just like, okay, I gotta click on the things. And it's a lot. It's a lot of menuing, a lot of sub-menuing. It's just, it takes away, like, it pulls you out of the game rather than it being immersive and being like, okay, you're doing these dungeons. It's like you do like 5 to 10 minutes of gameplay, do a bunch of menuing. 5 to 10 minutes of gameplay, do a bunch of menuing. It pulls you out of that moment sort of deal.
Absolutely. I remember when I was playing through, this would be God of War 3, you know, the climactic conclusion of the God of War series. Zeus had gotten away and you're finally taking it to the Olympus. And, you know, it's God of War. I rip off some dude's head. It's a big dramatic moment. We finally got him. Rip off his head. Blah, a big rainbow of blood. And it's like getting ahead in life. Bring, like pops up in the corner. I'm like, come on, like achievement system. I hate when they're punny in my dramatic moments. And this very much felt like that. Yeah. Like, you did it. You slayed the forces of damnation and evil. There's a discount in the store. Baby. Should we open the store? Let's do that right now. You're like, what am I doing here? Like, let's celebrate. Let's breathe a little bit. And I really didn't have that experience with Pokemon Unite because it was multiplayer. Like, to me, there was this this cooldown period I need. And I think I'd be forgiving of that in Heroes of the Storm, even, because I played your game. I've exited that room. I'm now back in the lobby. You know, the lecture's over. I'm now going to rejoin the con and there's shops everywhere. I don't mind so much. But when you're in this like immersive experience, having a linear pathway before you, and suddenly the game says, by the way, you know, there's shops available. I go, whoa, hey, creepy.
It's just it pulls you out. Like, as I said, it pulls you out of it so hard. But it's I will say this, for anyone that is actually interested in checking out Diablo Immortal, do it. Like, if you don't want to play it on your phone, play it on PC. Like, it has. I've run into a bug or two here and there. One of the bugs that I actually ran into was my buttons stopped working, in the sense of like, I couldn't use 1 through 4. Or like your heroic or your ultimate, your R button, but I could use my mouse to click an attack. So it was just a weird bug. Like, I left and I rejoined and it worked, and you know, I quit the game, restarted, and it worked perfectly fine. But like, the biggest thing is, I would say, give it a shot. Like, I know we're sitting here and we're saying, you know, like, it pulls you out. There's all these menus, but like, it is in itself. Like, I did have a good time playing it. Like, to circle back to it all, like, It does have its flaws, and most, if not every game, has a flaw in some way, shape, or form. It's still fun though. Like, if you're a snob for graphics, the graphics look pretty good. I know some things got reused, but a lot of games reuse things. Like, for example, God of War. There's people on the internet who are already upset that in Ragnarok, the preview of Kratos getting into the boat is the exact same animation from the last God of War, and it's like, okay, like. I can understand, like, oh, you're reusing animations, but, like, I have never created a game, so I don't know what goes into it. But, like, if the animation works, like, that's fine to reuse. So I get both sides of that. For me, it's a non-issue. But, like, visually, it's a pretty good-looking game. Like, I'd recommend it still. Like, give it a shot.
I remember that God of War example on Twitter, as the animator was basically like, do you have any idea how long I worked? It took me 6 months to get that kid in the boat at the same time you got right? The boat. We're reusing it, okay? I'm not reinventing the wheel. We're all going to eat dinner with forks and spoons. We're not making a hover tech just so you can... it's not right. Let's just use what works.
If you consider it even like lore wise, like Ragnarok takes place right after Last God of War. Why would Kratos get in the boat differently? Why does it matter?
The kid's not any older, I don't think.
Literally, I think it takes place like just a little bit after the last game. So it's anyways, but it's just one of those things. It's just like, well, you gotta redo all of the animations and stuff. And I'm not saying that you have to do that at all. Like, I understand some games don't look very good nowadays and that some things were reused for them. And yeah, definitely I agree with your argument. But spend more time on animating Valkyries that are going to ruin our lives in the new God of War.
I honestly thought they did a decent job making some new models. Like, it wasn't a complete rehash. It wasn't like I was playing a custom StarCraft map where... Clearly someone went like drag and drop just blah, 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 across the map, dropped a whole bunch of the same exact things I had seen before. And that I did appreciate. I'm a big stickler for those reused animations often.
Just on the note really quickly. Sorry, tangent. Did you guys talk about the new Heroes of Storm map in StarCraft 2?
No.
Did you hear about this?
No.
There was someone who made a new Heroes of Storm map in StarCraft 2, and it's like StarCraft themed, if I'm not mistaken.
Makes sense.
It's really like I think it's like Protoss or something. Protoss and Zerg themed. I'm not 100% sure, but like it looks really, really cool. Like, there's a whole YouTube video on it and everything. Like, someone sent it to me. I'll have to get it and send it over to you guys for when Garrett's back for Into the Nexus. But it actually looks really, really cool. I think it's a I want to say it's like a 3-lane StarCraft based map or something like that.
Very cool. Oh wait, I think I may have found this very YouTube.
Oh yeah.
Let me see.
It was like a month ago or so, I think.
Nope, 2016. This ain't it. But still.
No. Okay. Yeah, it was pretty recent. It was see too.
One thing I am feeling from Immortal as well, and this is actually, this comes from, you know, watching a lot of CCL recently, is I could use the heroes. I could go for the heroes camera zooming out again a little bit. I think we're a little tight in there. And maybe it's just all the Hogger I'm playing and the Muradin playing. Like, my brain is very much in space in that way. But after watching all the CCL, I'm like, we could make room. And plus, the units would look better. You know, it's an older game. Nothing looks bad by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But you zoom out, hey, you get that quality jump a little bit.
I'm with you on this. Like, I know we already got one zoom out on heroes, which thank God we got that because it was already so
bizarre.
Zoomed in.
Bizarre. Like, now
right?
You go look at the game right now and tell me that was one zoomed in, and I'll go, surely not.
It's like two, like if you have like your scroll wheel, like it's like two clicks in on your scroll wheel, and it's like, really? We played like this? Like, yeah. Holy crap. But I would agree with you, like I, you know, from when I do casting of Heroes of Storm, like there's your base zoom, which is what you normally see. There's a zoom one, as I like to call it, which is the pretty standard thing you see in most casts or even Hero CCL. And then there's the third zoom, which that one's too much. If you're casting Heroes of Storm, don't stick on third zoom. Everyone looks like itty bitty. The models are way too small. But that second zoom, that first zoom, I would love that. Like, you can just see a little bit more. I think it'd be good, but. Yeah, I like that option at least. That'd be cool.
It would be nice to go just a little bit further out. I would love that update as we've added these more multi-stage battles, which I feel like we're in. Like, that's something that I'm really enjoying about current iteration heroes is we're not really focus firing, even in the CCL. I mean, feel free to correct me and kind of, or even sure, clarify sure. This thought I'm having. But so often, the tank... There was a time, maybe this is the best way to describe it. There was a time where both teams traded tanks, and your tank would go into our back line, and their tank would go in your back line, and you'd see who killed the tank first. We're okay. Still in a kill the tank meta, but instead it's more like the giant killer bruiser and the one giant killer assassin are dealing with the tank over here, but Sylvanas is up around the side, and you got Chromie firing from this angle, and Anduin's on his own angle, and then Stukov's, like, in the melee, but healing. Like, there's, like, three different fights going on at the same time. And particularly when playing tank and bruiser, it's a really, really fun meta to play in because you basically look at this ongoing battlefield and say, where am I needed most?
I think that's right. Like, I think a lot of the fights that we see in Heroes of Storm can either be described as front to back, meaning you basically charge straight at the enemy team's face and you run from their front line to their back line, or it's this kind of chaotic, discombobulated fight where you've got your healers peeled away because Hogger got a god tier bounce in the back line and now he's harassing Anduin. And then you've got Blaze on the opposing side who's jet propulsioned in and he's now putting pressure onto your Tyrande or something like that. So it is very much like, I think there's a big play into peeling and splitting up the enemy team. And I think a lot of us, we end up kind of panicking for ourselves in that sense. Like I do this all the time. Like if I'm not on main tank and let's say I'm playing a Hanzo or a Falstad, if I start getting dove, I'm out of there. I'm not running towards my tank or anything. I'm going as quickly as I'm going as quickly as I can to like a structure or a retreat line, my well, my front gate immediately. So I'm also getting peeled. I'm splitting the fight. So I think you're very much right in this. Like, we see front to back very often, but we also see this kind of chaos where you get these solo laners that really know how to get in the back line, create this disruption, and then everyone's kind of split in the fight where you've got, you know, tank versus tank almost, and then you've got all the ranged assassins who are all kind of battling each other as well. So it becomes this interesting dichotomy and breakdown of how everything is split by our frontliners. And I think the frontliners are kind of really, really starting to bring the peel meta forward, because for the longest time we were in double support and then we were into Omega stun meta, which we still have stun metas now, but like I feel like this chaos fighting is a big thing that we've been seeing more and more, especially in the CCL.
Oh, we found the map here thanks to Chad.
Hell yes,
I'm gonna put it up on screen here. It is called Battle for Slayin.
I saw that too and I'm like, okay, that looks right. Yeah, so this is I'm pretty sure this is the one that. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's really, really well put together, honestly. And this is all done in StarCraft. Keep this in mind, everyone. If you're looking at this, if you're watching back the VOD or anything, this is all in StarCraft. It looks like UI wise, you would consider this to be a new map in Heroes of Storm. Like, I'm looking like Malfurion, his model looks a little weird, but everything else, like the utility bar, the player bar. Well, actually, there's only 4v4, so that's a little incorrect there, but still, it's so
Diablo's
crazy.
Going. Then we got Diablo here. There appears to be a Phoenix
real Phoenix, not the bad one in Heroes.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I know you hate Phoenix, and to this point, I thought it was all mechanical. Are you saying the real Phoenix is the quad pod? If it's a tripod,
yes!
You think the real Phoenix is the one that like was reborn via whoa. Ascended robotics
I don't remember
either.
The lore is so wild on him too. It's like he was a battle scorned like general, and yeah, no, that's,
but then his memory was like uploaded to the Matrix or something, so then they had it available to like put it in a new robot. I mean, basically Legacy of the Void was insane and all the lore went out the window in that particular game. But yeah,
it's actually Talendar, right? Is the one that I'm thinking of.
Oh, didn't he? Yeah, he like, well, he towards the end, he was like, I will get a new name for myself because I am not Phoenix. I have risen above and I'm my own robot person. I see.
Talendar is the Purifier and the Templar Warrior. He was created by brain scans of the Templar hero Phoenix. Okay.
Of course. Naturally.
Of course. Yes. That makes complete sense. But I'd rather have him in Heroes.
Wait,
still.
No, that's Nova with a flamethrower? Okay, so Malfurion is guiding this particular video, and he has talents, he's got all the ability buttons, the talents don't seem to match, Diablo's running around, it's Diablo from Heroes of the Storm, he's mounting even, so this game in the StarCraft engine clearly has assets ported over, but also a lot of custom-made stuff. And
do you know what, oh, sir, go ahead.
We're looking at this unique map they've made here, which looks like it has a boss pit, it's three lanes, it's got mercenary camps, actually?
Mm-hmm. What I really like about this, and it's something that I kind of wish was like an option to turn on, just to learn. I wish you could turn on structure radius, like range.
Ooh,
like,
yeah.
So for example, in this video, when the Malfurion gets close to the fort front gate towers, you can see the radius of their range. League of Legends does this. I don't know about Dota 2, but I know League of Legends does this as well. Like, you get too close, you can see the threat range. I would love that to just be an option that I can turn on and off. Because I just like to learn. Like, it's one of those things where you kind of have the intuition around it, but like being able to visually see it, you can then start to learn these things. And it's just one of those things where as you're trying to progress and get better at the game, having these visual nodes are great. Even auto attack range in your heroes. Like, for example, Lucio, his baseline like healing circle or whatever for Lucio's trait, that's his attack range, unless you increase at some point with level one with a house party or whatever. But like, I would love to see like the ability to say like, okay, here's my auto range so I can learn these autos from these heroes and just see it. I don't know. I'm a visual person, so I just wish that was an option in Heroes of the Storm.
Well, and that people are recreating Heroes of the Storm in StarCraft. I've heard some cheeky comments about that in the Reddit, but I didn't know it was to this level. I didn't know people were actually going about doing it.
I gotta say, like when Garrett's back and he's feeling better, you gotta show him this, because I'm a little blown away that I'm the one teaching you guys about this.
Yeah, I hadn't heard a word. I mean, for StarCraft, for us, it's basically co-op commander, and that's how we mm-hmm. De-stress maybe from time to time. But I was not aware they were getting in on the custom. They got Unstoppable. They got Nature's Cleanse in here. Oh my goodness, they have a full Unstoppable for Malfurion. Yeah, so they're full on like making stuff up, but also fixing the game. In some mindsets, they're changing things for the better.
Did you, speaking of StarCraft 2, did you know that they've created, not they are, but they have created Hearthstone Battlegrounds in StarCraft 2?
Really?
Yeah. I've heard about this from a bunch of friends. I've watched it through a Discord stream from a friend before. And it's one of those things, like it's like Warcraft 3 customs, and I'm sure some StarCraft customs do this as well, where like there's so many units that the game just chugs And like, you can't even like see what you're doing. Like you just kind of like pan into a corner so your game doesn't crash. But apparently Hearthstone Battlegrounds is a thing in StarCraft 2 as well. It's a custom game that you can play.
I remember when StarCraft 2 came out and they were showing off their map maker and they did Bejeweled and they did tower defenses and they did all kinds of crazy, crazy stuff with that engine and its capabilities. But mm-hmm. I didn't know it was still such a busy community.
People are like this right here, the video that we're looking at, this Battle for Slayin, this was created in the StarCraft 2 engine, and as Kyle was saying, like, Diablo's in this. They've got models from Abathur's in this. Well, of course Abathur's in this. Sorry, Malfurion, excuse me.
And I know you could import Warcraft models into here. I don't know about Warcraft Reforged, but there were World of Warcraft models available in some parts of StarCraft 2. So it looks like this is almost a Infernal Shrines kind of adjacent map. You got
it does, yeah.
Or well, actually no. So you win an Infernal Shrines.
More like
pit.
More like it looks more like when you look at the minimap, it looks like the size of Warhead Junction a little bit.
Yeah.
Like it reminds me of the Warhead Junction layout a little bit. Apparently it uses like a Blackheart mechanic or something like this. I'm looking at it right now, there's remaining shots 8 of 12.
Right.
So there's like a Blackheart's bot like map. It's I gotta go into the depths on this one, into the weeds, and check this one a little bit further. But it's so cool. Like, it's so cool to see that there's still people creating unique stuff like this in StarCraft 2.
It's a very interesting problem because it's not just throwing a switch. In fact, it would cost Blizzard not only the hours but the licensing to create a builder for Heroes of the Storm.
Oh god, yeah.
This is not an engine that Blizzard owns per se. Like, this is more like an Unreal situation. You got Frostbite over at EA. They own Frostbite in that sense, and that's why they force RPGs like Mass Effect and Dragon Age to use Frostbite in the past to horrible effect. Look at Anthem. It is not made to run RPGs, but because they own the license to Frostbite, they forced those developers to use that engine. And
go ahead.
And it made it a lot cheaper to produce for them. But, you know, that's the excitement. If you want to get a little excited about it, they just named it Dreadwolf, the new Dragon Age game.
Ooh.
It's said to be using, I think it's Unreal 4, perhaps. But it's not using Frostbite. It's not using a multiplayer engine to make a single player RPG experience. So some people are real excited. I'm extremely reserved. I've been hurt before.
You know what I'm actually really pumped about? Because you were just mentioning engines and it popped up recently. So Frost Giant Studios, they started a while ago. And it was when they started, it was just a couple dudes from the StarCraft 2 side of things from Blizzard who left, and it was like two guys from StarCraft 2, and I think it was Legacy of the Void. And actually I was talking about it on stream like a week ago, and someone was like, no dude, they have a bigger staff. I went and looked, like, they now have like people from CNC Generals 2, Warcraft Frozen Throne, Diablo 4. Like, they've got a huge crew now, and Frost Giant, they're making like the next RTS, and if I can't remember completely, and I'm trying to look it up right now but I can't find it. They're either using the brand new Unreal Engine that just came out, or they're using Unreal 4, because 5 just came out, I think, right?
Right.
So they're either using 5 or 4 at Frost Giant Studios for the new RTS, and Frost Giant Studio also has an agreement with Dreamhaven, which is the Mike Morhaime company that formed. And it's Dreamhaven's not working on the game, but they're doing I always forget the word for it. I always blank on this, but they're doing consultation, like they're giving like feedback and criticism to Frost Giant Studios. So it's like you still have people like Dustin Browder. He's over. It's not Dreamshot. It's Dreamhaven. It's like Moonshot or something like that, which is like a sister company of Dreamhaven. But you've got Dustin Browder over there, like Alan DeBiri, I think, is over there as well. Like, you've got a lot of people at Dreamhaven who worked on StarCraft and stuff that are going to be helping out the Frost Giant people, which are a bunch of StarCraft dudes. So I seriously, like, when it comes to like anticipated games, I want to see what Frost Giant Studios is doing, because like, if they're using Unreal Engine 5, that'll be cool. Unreal Engine 4 is still great. I can't wait to see what they do, honestly. That is one game I'm actually really, really excited to see, because it's supposed to be like the new RTS. It's supposed to be the best new thing.
Yeah. Oh, man. They're pulling some big words here on their website. Now is our turn to carry forward the legacy of epic storytelling, innovative co-op gameplay, and celebrating esports that made RTS great. Real-time strategy returns is their tagline. Mm-hmm. And this week, everyone found out by looking around LinkedIn, I believe it was Interceptor. Was that his name on Reddit? There was Spazzo.
I don't remember.
One of the big... Basically,
I know Spazzo, yes.
Everyone just found out that Daybringer, the last designers for Heroes of the Storm, just moved over to Frost Giant as well. So they got Daybringer, who is responsible for tons of hero designs.
And I think that was the thing that actually spurred the conversation to have me look more into Frost Giant Studios, because I didn't realize that they had grown as much as they had when it comes to their development team and everything. So just really excited to see. I mean, I don't know when we're going to get anything from them, because I think Frost Giant started maybe 2 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that. But it's going to be exciting from them. Actually, speaking of previous developers of Heroes of Storm, or even just Blizzard in general, I got to actually try out the new Marvel Snap game, and that's Second Dinner. It's a Ben Brode's company, I think, yeah. Actually has the job for licensing or whatever for it. The Marvel Snap, by the way, if anyone gets a chance to play it, do it. It's really, really fun. Games are quick, very easy to learn. I don't feel like I'm behind a paywall in that game either, at least right now. Not right now in the beta that I played.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
It's definitely a game's awakening right now. A lot of them are mobile, of course, but there's a mm-hmm. lot going on. One more thing here I found about.
Please.
We were privileged to be part of an early sneak peek by Frost Giant today. This is Back to Warcraft. Now that is exciting, because Back to Warcraft is the folks who's been keeping.
That's big, yeah.
Yeah, they've been keeping Reforged alive with technically against term of services, but you know, Blizzard's not stopping them because they're keeping the game.
To be honest, they are the best Warcraft 3 tournament series out there. Like that is, in my opinion, like that's your hero CCL of Warcraft 3. Like they're the big dogs in that department.
And the fact that they got the Back to Warcraft team excited, like they're sticklers, mm-hmm. and they should be. You know, their game got messed up. They have every right to throw down a little bit. Yeah, Frost Giant is looking really promising.
I gotta see if I can twist Grubby's arm this weekend, because if Back to Warcraft is getting some looks, maybe Grubby got some looks too. So I'll have to twist his arm, and maybe I can't talk about it publicly, but I might DM you, Kyle, and let you know what he says.
I also tried out. Let me get the name on this right. Catalyst Black. It was a mobile game that has Cloaken as their community manager.
Kid Kagiri actually think did voices for that.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure, because I think I saw a tweet from her where she was like thanking Cloaken for like helping with some voice acting stuff or something for the game.
Very cool. I mean, we've taken to the wind a little bit over on Heroes of the Storm, but it's cool to see all the projects from all our various developers coming to light. And this one, this one is, so it's listed as an epic battleground shooter. I think the closest thing I kind of felt it was like Battle Right adjacent.
Okay.
You go into an arena, there's lots of bullets flying everywhere. Pick up guns and pick up things and fight little units and level up. 12v12 battles, 5v5. It's very, very bombastic. But if you are interested in a mobile game, your Heroes of the Storm skills will translate over immediately and you will feel amazing.
And it's Catalyst Black, you said?
Catalyst Black. It's by Super Evil Megacorp. They're the ones who made Vanglory, if you remember that craze 4 years ago.
I don't remember that one, honestly.
A lot of Heroes of the Storm people got into that as well.
I'll have to check out this game. So is it only mobile? Is this Catalyst Black?
I believe so. Install on mobile devices. I think they're still in their beta right now. I don't know if they're going to go computer ever. You know, the words, the symbol, the words, you know, it's very mobile-y. It may not look like something too unique from the top, but what I did like about it is just my skills from Heroes went right on over there.
No, that's good. I'm right there with you. Like, if I can take the skills that I've used for the last 5 to 7 years or so, poorly at that. If I can use those in another game, I'm happy. Like, I go into League of Legends and I have a horrible time. I mean, last hitting mechanics and literally understanding what is even happening in the game half the time. It's like, oh, cool, I'm dead. The time to kill in League of Legends makes no sense to me. And I'm sure it's one of those things where, like, I'm sure there's people that come to Heroes and they're like, why am I dead? I don't understand. Like, why is that cow dancing and playing a guitar? Like, it's so I don't like when I look at Heroes of the Storm, the fights make sense to me. And I'm sure some people who look at League, you know, they look at League and they're like, oh, yeah, this all makes sense. This is fine. But I try so hard to learn it. But it just keeps my smooth brain just keeps passing it over. I don't know.
Well, and when it comes to League and Dota, I'm just from another time at this point. I played those games pre-meta, and I have no interest in having a game telling me what items to buy. Like, I will do talent builds. I will make interesting choices. But if you tell me I have to have this exact build, I go, now, wait a minute, game. Aren't you fun? No?
Well, it's also like when I tried to learn a little bit of League for fun, like I would talk to people and they'd be like, well, you know, this team is more damage based, so you should have gone this build. It's like, well, how would I have known that? It's like, no, you just learn these things. It's like, oh, okay, I'm good. No, it's like, because there's metas within metas, and just it's just this layering effect with League and Dota, where it's like, okay, you can draft this way where it's, you know, on paper it looks like this, but then the item builds affect everything. And it's just freeform jazz at that point.
That's a good way to put it. It's very much that style. The side point I was making before, actually, very exciting tangent. I'm really excited about Frost Giant.
No, I'm all about it. No, me too. I'm right there with you, bud.
Is that Heroes at this point? It's not developer time. They literally would have to go back to the company that they bought the StarCraft engine to and license out Heroes of the Storm to have a map editor. And the sheer bomb of that money for Heroes to get a custom editor would be so high that I cannot see it happening. However,
oh, I agree.
StarCraft already spent that money. And if people are recreating Heroes of the Storm in StarCraft, there is that opportunity, and perhaps quite a bit cheaper, where they say, well, wait a minute, guys. Why don't we put Heroes of the Storm inside StarCraft, and then we can have the editor there? I mean, we've got Diablo's, perhaps the most impressive thing, and it's kind of a weird thing to say, but the most important thing to me here is Diablo's mounting. Diablo in this game is charging people in the walls. Like, clearly, this imported the skills and abilities of Heroes of the Storm into StarCraft, and there's a real opportunity there.
Have you seen, I'm watching this video with you as well, I haven't noticed it, have you seen how Diablo's Fire Stomp looks here? I'm wondering which, oh wait, it's the current version, it's the arc form, it's not the old star form where it went on every direction.
God. Which I do miss that, for some reason, I've gotten used to it, and plus now I don't reveal myself every time I'm doing a camp, so maybe I'll break even. On the idea.
I will say this. If you know, let's get the tinfoil out here for this one. If Frost Giant Studios makes the RTS and everything that they're going to make with people who have worked on Command and Conquer Generals, Warcraft 3, as well as StarCraft games, I can't see a world where they release that game without some sort of custom map editor. Like, I feel like that is such a... it's such a backbone for a lot of these RTS games, because it's community driven custom games. Wintermaw. I can't tell you how many days I probably spent playing Wintermaw in Warcraft 3, like the tower defense type games, like all of this stuff. Like, it's a weird world where I can see the future where, like, someone tries to make Heroes of Storm in Frost Giant's new game. That's where I'm getting at with this. Like,
I could see
some crazy, crazy things happening with this. And I don't know. We'll see. As I said, I'm really excited to see what the future holds for a lot of these developers that are making their own stuff. Like, as I mentioned, Marvel Snap, you've got this new RTS from Frost Giant, you've got unannounced projects from Dreamhaven, as well as Moonshot, which has Dustin Browder, who, I mean, he was the rock god in StarCraft. He was the start out for Heroes of the Storm. He was the lead for that. So I can't wait. Like, I really can't wait for the future of these developers, because I know they're going to make something really, really special with what they're able to do now.
Hmm.
At least that's where I'm very optimistic on the future. I'm very like, I'm just like, let's go. Like, let's give these developers more availability to create stuff and let's treat them better too.
I don't think you can expect in the future. We've experimented with it now. The esports run completely by the company, and I just don't think it's viable. And it's not sane either for functioning human beings to know all of the intricacies of what esports needs. And for instance, in StarCraft's day, there was a issue where you could proxy a base basically by building a wall at their exit ramp. So you'd run over to their base, completely wall them, and they were stuck inside while you took over the map. And so with the custom map editor, they said, hey, we're going to put a bunker here. We're going to put a little invincible, in some cases, destructible bunker that's going to slow down this strategy. And they were able to implement that as fans and as an esports company faster than the company could verify it, test it, and basically get in the way if they needed to. Like, Heroes of the Storm alone, like, how many bugs are on that Spazzo list, that big list that's available?
No, I've got it. I mean, I could start listing off bugs that we don't see certain maps for. For example, there's no Blackheart's Bay because catapults don't go to core and bottom lane. They get stuck on the destroyed structure. It's one of the many reasons we don't see Blackheart's Bay. Obviously, people don't like it. I'm biased because I like pirate-themed maps. But, like, I'll be honest. Like, I love Blackheart's Bay. I think it's not a great map. I'll admit that right there. But thematically, I think it's really cool and stuff like that. So, but yeah, no, I mean, there's tons of quote unquote features in Heroes of Storm. I mean, I don't think a hero that can split himself into three other heroes should be able to hearth and then be back into lane in 1 millisecond. Samuro.
Right. And if a esports company or tournament said to themselves, we don't want that to be a feature in our upcoming matchup, or hey, let's just delete Crowd Surfer so it's not accidentally picked for 4 years of NGS, they should be able to do that.
Yeah.
And they can do that as an individual choice. And if those choices are strong enough, like that bunker issue that happened in StarCraft, it became a live thing in the live game eventually. But that, even StarCraft and, you know, GSL and their current iterations of in the Korean esports scene is struggling to get their maps verified in time for their upcoming tournaments. So the latter differs from the actual tournament game, and it gets messy when you ask a human being to verify this stuff, of course. And a company has other objectives than keeping a 10-year-old game alive. Like, I do not blame a conglomerate for making these tough choices.
Yeah, I mean, it. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, for some of these people, it is bottom dollar and stakeholders and stockholders, excuse me, which is unfortunate. But I mean, you gotta have money to run the stuff. I mean, look at CCL. I mean, Gilly literally bluntly come out and said that it's been operating at a loss. Like, that's not new. Oh my God, it's new. Like, it's just we made, like, for example, we made the change to Grubby's channel because we want to try and pull in sponsors for CCL. We want to pull in more sponsors because these things don't pay for themselves. A $33,000 prize pool. I mean, with players getting paid out with stipends, with there being content and creation stuff that we can do, like, it's a lot of money that goes into it. We don't just go to Mall of America and say, give us money. Like, this stuff costs something. So you have to consider at the end of the day, how can we make this also viable beyond just what we already have? So, like, if we get 1,000 more viewers in our metrics overall because we swapped to Grubby as the main channel and Wisdom as the secondary channel per se, or the B stream, I think that's great. Like, and I know people were upset and they were confused, and I can understand, I can resonate with that. But at the end of the day, if we want the thing that we love to survive, we have to do these things. So just that's my little PSA for anyone that might have missed it, or they're just like, why? And Bahamut's here. That's the reason. What it boils down to is it's trying to attract the people that we need to keep these things, well, even more saturated. Like, that's the big, I mean, we're running a LAN this year. That's not cheap. Like, I've been in a couple LAN meetings here and there, and like, budget's a thing. Like, people talked about studio lighting, and I heard the pricing on just studio lighting, and I'm like, that's like more than most people make in a year for a single event. So keep it in mind, like, it's expensive. expensive to run a league, it's more expensive to run a LAN event where you're flying everyone out, you're going to hotels, you've got studio space you've got to rent, you've got electricity, you got to pay the people, you got to pay admins, you got to pay casters. So it's a lot, and we're all doing our best, but at the same time, it's hard. Like, video games aren't as popular as the NFL or the NHL or whatever big sport you like to watch. It's not as big as cricket. Cricket's not big in the United States, but it's huge everywhere else. So
it is insane sometimes when I think about it. I'm like, well, what are we even doing over here? Like, talking about updates when the players are the things that change in basketball, and they've got more than enough to say for entire channels to exist based around this game. It's absolute insanity, and it's that raw number feel. So really what we should be thanking at the end of the day is Raid Shadowlands or Shadow Legends for having their big 3-minute block in the middle of your favorite video on YouTube right now. Go thank that creator for running their Raid Shadow Legends trailer, because that's how they got paid. That's how they covered their bills. You can't
play. I can't tell you how many of the stream elements, you have a new sponsorship opportunity. Yeah. And then I go and look at it, and it's Raid Shadow Legends, make $800. And I'm like, that market's more saturated than a sponge. Like, come on. What, like, because for anyone that doesn't know, the way that Raid Shadow Legends works, they have to pull in new installs. So it's like, if I've installed the game and I've done the thing for, let's say, Kyle Ferguson's stream, and then Garrett is doing the same thing. If I do all the login stuff for Garrett, he doesn't get anything, actually. I've learned this. They need to pull in, like, brand new players and accounts. Yeah, it has to be, like, brand new accounts is actually what gets you the sponsorship stuff. So, like, if you use a streamer's code, it actually doesn't give them anything unless it's brand freaking new, which.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's like, it's a bit of a catch 22. Like, you play their game for 3 hours on stream or whatever you have to do, and you can pull in a bunch of people, but it has to be new accounts made. It's wild. That's why I also don't do it. But yeah, it's a boring game.
Yeah. Well, you can't control that. I mean, on a base level, when the graphics are different from the graphics in the trailer and the...
Oh, God.
It got kind of weird, but interesting.
Question, because we're just spiraling off topic today, and we'll just keep going.
Absolutely.
Have you ever actually played Raid Shadow Legends? I'm curious.
I have not. No, I have not.
It's...
Are you gonna
it is kind of fun. It is a little fun. It's one of those great games that are fun to play if you're like cooking a meal, because you can go fiddle with your phone, go cook the pasta, spend 10 minutes chopping up like vegetables and stuff, and then you can go back and you can go fiddle with your phone. Like, it's one of those types of games. It's not like Hearthstone Battlegrounds or Marvel Snapped or even maybe not Diablo Immortal, but like it's those other games, you have to be paying attention. You have to be active in the game. Whereas Raid Shadow Legends, you can just kind of like set it and forget it sort of thing, which that part is nice, but it becomes redundant, repetitive, and boring. So
I can totally see that. I think tower defenses satisfy that feel as well. And in fact, our biggest concern, I know Garrett got to play the new Arclight Rumble World of Warcraft game.
Yeah, I want to try that.
His main concern was just speed, which sounds like something you could fix. Like, you just crank those units so they actually interact faster, because by the time you place them in the 3-minute game that you have, they only cross to the other side of the map about a minute later. So, and coming from StarCraft, as well as Heroes of the Storm, like, it's that meat grinder feel we love so much. That's the Diablo feel, right? Is like, these things are going to clash and there's going to be explosions. And that's where we get that joy from. So something that maybe look up, you know, hey, look where you're walking, maybe, like, that's a good idea. You know, your train stop might come up. And I do like that. If we're talking anything about, you know, good things about Diablo Immortal, is I do like I can just turn it off. Like, I just press the button, I turn it off, and it doesn't really care. It doesn't
exactly
set me back a bunch. Or
it's not like the FromSoft games I've been playing where it's like Bloodborne. It's like, okay, where did I last die? Can I quit out the game? Am I in a good spot? Like, I'm definitely with you on that one, because it's nice to be able to be like, I'm done with Diablo Immortal right now. I'm going to go do something else. I'm going to go take the dog for a walk.
Well, I said we were going to talk more about the CCL. We did, in a sense. That was
a bit.
Yeah. It was a really, I really enjoyed that aside, though. So if if people are tuning in this weekend, about as sure as possible as you can do it.
Sure.
What would be the storyline going into week 4 here? that they should be
Granite
watching.
Gaming versus Storm Esports will be your first best of five of the weekend. One of those two teams will find their first victory in the season as they both sit 0-3.
Oh, wow.
Diamond Hands versus Wild Heart will be a fun matchup, should go the distance. Chilly Mountain versus Simplicity, unfortunately, should be a quick 3-0 for Chilly Mountain. 30K versus Oxygen on Sunday, that'll be the final, the fourth best of five of the weekend. That is the matchup to see. June 5th, that best of five, 30K versus Oxygen, should be the big clash of titans. 30K is a monumental roster. Oxygen, monumental as well. It's my least favorite storyline, but it is the storyline that everyone loves. EU versus NA.
I love when the two teams that are struggling or two players that are at the bottom right now get to battle each other, because then they both look good together.
Yeah.
So that Granite, yeah. Storm, and plus, I mean, actually week five there, Simplicity versus Granite should be really fun to see.
I will say this about Granite. Week three was their best showing they've ever had. Yes, it was a 3-1 against Oxygen, but that was also a 3-1 against Oxygen. So the swap of Smexy for Quacknix, so Smexy is now benched and Quacknix is now in, has really, really fixed, not fixed, but has really looked a lot better. So versus Storm, I don't expect it to be a 3-0 either way. I actually expect that to be a decently long match, to be honest. Lobber's itchy for a victory. I've seen it on Twitter. He wants that W.
Awesome. Well, week four sounds like an awesome week to tune in for. I know a lot of these teams are spending this last week practicing pretty heavily,
mm-hmm.
and getting their rosters changed up, as you mentioned, but also new heroes in line as they've sort of figured out their ping issues. It's a really, really good time to tune in. And on that note, you should tune in, and you should enjoy Bahamut's fabulous casting. Bahamut, where can you be found on the interweb when not on the CCL?
Well, really quickly, for CCL, you can watch it over on the Wisdom Channel or on Grubbies at 11 a.m. PDT, 2 o'clock EDT, and 20 CEST. For any suffering or great content that you'd like to see on my channel, I'm on twitch.tv/Bahamut Gaming, or you can follow me on YouTube as well. I put some VODs up here and there, or on Twitter as well. It's all Bahamut Gaming. Just look that up. But mostly Heroes, and from time to time, I've been playing Darkest Dungeon right now, and
I
love it. I love it. It's hard for me to not play Darkest Dungeon. But I've been also playing Bloodborne here and there, and of course, tons of Heroes of Storm content. But definitely come on by, come hang out, come say hello, and ask me any questions that you want. Also, I've said this on the broadcast as well, but for anyone that is ever watching the broadcast, if Grubby, I, or Justin ever bring up a concept that you do not know, feel free to DM me on Twitter, on Discord, send a tweet at me, ask me in, like, just ask me, and I will bring it up on broadcast and we'll explain it. Because the best thing about Hero CCL is we can use it as a platform to educate the community on concepts, ideas, and execution.
Well said. Well said. Oh, man, yeah, you're making your way past the Miller here. I'm going to watch your Darkest Dungeon mod. I love Darkest Dungeon so much.
Oh, my God, that Miller fight was absolutely awful. Oh, my God, that
He's
Miller
brutal.
Fight was so bad.
He's
it
brutal.
Is so bad.
That whole mode is just insane.
I love it, though.
Everyone listening here, thank you for your support over at patreon.com for ITN. Patreon.com/ITN is the place to support. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Sean B. and Mike R. You can catch the live show normally Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern when Garrett is available. Naturally, as Garrett is out sick, we're not really quite sure how long he's going to be sick. So again, be sure to message him. Let him know that you're thinking about him. Hope him well. Wish him well. And hopefully we'll have him back next week. Until that time, I hope this is the right button. It's the right button. You all have a good one. Thanks for listening. Good luck. Have fun. Take care.